Hi, and welcome to our weekly Look at Things, episode 39 of Then and Now, the podcast. I'm your host, John Chomo. In this week's episode, we'll continue our habit of looking at events and birthdays on upcoming dates. We'll tackle a couple of topics in our topic section, and we'll go down to three good questions where we got some good questions, kind of an open-ended one from loyal listener Nick Brausch. So, stay tuned for that. First of all, we'll hit the next 7 days, starting with Friday, November 22nd. That is Independence Day in Lebanon, by the way. On the morning of November 22nd, 1963 in Britain, an album was released on Parlophone Records called With the Beatles. It's the same picture that Meet the Beatles had in the United States. The four black and white silhouetted faces of the four guys. That was the big event for a few hours on November 22nd, 1963. As you probably know, and as was the subject of our special podcast a couple of weeks ago, which you can find on Spotify, by the way, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas on that same day, November 22nd, 1963. 5 years later to the day, the Beatles once again released an album. It's called The White Album, simply The Beatles. Birthdays on November 22nd. Abigail Adams, really one of the great heroes that you don't hear enough about, really, of our revolutionary period. Abigail Adams, wife of John Adams, born November 22nd, 1744. She was probably the more level-headed and the more erudite in terms of her writing than John Adams was. And he admitted it freely. A great mind, she would have in another era, in another time, been a political leader, I think. Former president of France, the late Charles de Gaulle, born November 22nd, 1890. Comedian Rodney Dangerfield. My wife and I disagree on that. She doesn't like Rodney very much. I get a great kick out of old Rodney Dangerfield clips. Rodney Dangerfield, born November 22nd, 1921. Billie Jean King, hero, tennis great, advocate. Billie Jean King is 81. Stevie Van Zandt of the E Street Band, Bruce Springsteen's band, will be 74. Actress Jamie Lee Curtis will be 66. And actress Scarlett Johansson will be 40 on November 22nd. Moving up to November 23rd, a very famous college football game was played 40 years ago on November 23rd. I think it was the Friday after Thanksgiving that year, as I recall. Boston College played Miami in the old Orange Bowl. Bernie Kosar, quarterbacking the Miami Hurricanes a year after they won the national championship. Doug Flutie, quarterbacking Boston College. And on the final play of the game, as those of you older folks may recall, Flutie scrambled around in the backfield and hurled one about 65, 70 yards in the air to Gerard Phelan, who caught it in the end zone in spite of Miami having a couple of D-backs back there. They muffed it, and Phelan caught the ball clean. Miami lost to Boston College, and that pretty much iced the Heisman Trophy for Doug Flutie and made him a legend in college football history. Hail Flutie, it's called. The 14th U.S. President, Franklin Pierce, born November 23rd, 1804. One of my former students in history class, now Dr. Brian Jordan, wrote a book about Franklin Pierce when he was at Talmadge Middle School, believe it or not. Hello to Brian. If you ever listen to one of these, I say, hi, Brian, how you doing? Harpo Marx, one of the Marx brothers, the one who never talked in the films. Harpo Marx, born November 23rd, 1888. Host of Good Morning America on ABC, Robin Roberts, will be 64. ESPN NBA analyst Doris Burke will be 59. And Miley Cyrus will turn 32 on November 23rd. Moving to November 24th, Charles Darwin published his book On the Origin of Species on that date in 1859. Wilt Chamberlain, who was a Superman in basketball history, he doesn't get enough credit, believe it or not, for what he did, for things he did in games. It's just, he was ridiculous. He pulled 55 rebounds down on November 24th, 1960, against Bill Russell and the Boston Celtics. But as usually happened, Boston won the game 132-129 over the then Philadelphia Warriors, who Wilt was playing for. 55 rebounds. Okay. That was my high school career, I think, maybe. Freddie Mercury, not a happy moment, died of AIDS on November 24th, 1991, the great lead singer of Queen. On November 24th, 1963, the first televised murder took place as police led Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin of President Kennedy, out of the Dallas police station into a car that would take him to the county jail. Jack Ruby, a nightclub owner, stepped out of the shadows and fired a shot into Lee Oswald's abdomen. CBS and NBC, I think NBC was live with it. CBS showed it within 60 seconds of it happening. Oswald was fatally wounded. They took him to Parkland Hospital, the same hospital that President Kennedy had been taken to 2 days earlier, and he died there. So the first televised murder, I was 5 years old and remember it vividly. I talk a little bit more about it on our special podcast on the JFK assassination. Our 12th president, Zachary Taylor, born November 24th, 1784. Speaking of great basketball players, another guy who doesn't get enough credit, Oscar Robertson, the Big O, will turn 86 on November 24th. He could do it all, folks. He was just spectacular. The original drummer for the Beatles, Pete Best, will be 83 on November 24th. He toured through here this past summer or early fall. I think he played at the Kent Stage, as a matter of fact. Pete Best, 83. Colin Hanks, Tom Hanks' son and an actor in his own right, Colin Hanks will be 47, and Katherine Hagel will be 46. On November 25th, in 1758, the British captured Fort Duquesne and renamed it Fort Pitt. It was a fort at the confluence of the Allegheny and Monongahela Rivers, where they joined to form the Ohio River, now known as the Golden Triangle, in the city of Pittsburgh. That's kind of how it got its name, actually, when the British captured Fort Duquesne from the French and renamed it. The funeral and burial of President Kennedy was November 25th, 1963. Lots of birthdays. Very, very interesting list of folks here. Andrew Carnegie, one of the great barons of business in the 1800s. Andrew Carnegie, born in Scotland, November 25th, 1835. Joe DiMaggio, the Yankee Clipper, born November 25th, 1914. John Larroquette, who kind of was my doppelganger in earlier years a little bit, the actor John Larroquette, he'll be 77. Bucky Dent, anathema to New England baseball fans, I know. The former Yankees played for a few teams, but most famously hit a very unlikely home run in a one-game playoff game at Fenway Park in 1978. To help the Yankees beat the Red Sox and continue the curse at that point. Bucky Dent will be 73. John F. Kennedy Jr., born November 25th, 1960. Bernie Kosar, the great quarterback of the Cleveland Browns in the late 1980s, early 1990s. I mentioned him previously, played for Miami of Florida. Bernie will be 61. Hall of Famer Chris Carter from The Ohio State University will be 59. And actress Christina Applegate turns 53. Moving to November 26th, the movie Casablanca, one of my all-time favorite films, premiered in theaters on November 26, 1942, right during the Second World War. The Chinese Army entered the Korean War, a dramatic and bad turn of things, on November 26, 1950. John Harvard, who the university is named after, or November 26, 1607. Charles Schulz, who created Peanuts and all of the great characters, Charlie Brown, Lucy, Snoopy, etc. Charles Schulz, born November 26, 1922. He died the day his last Sunday Peanuts appeared in newspapers all over the world in 2000. Tina Turner, born November 26, 1938, had the pleasure of seeing the musical Tina with my wife at the E.J. Thomas Performing Arts Center here in Akron a few weeks ago. It was fantastic, actually. The Gravedigger, Richie Hebner, 1971 world champion with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Richie Hebner at third base for those teams, against right-handed hitters, or pitchers anyway. Richie Hebner will turn 77 on November 26th. Speaking of the Pirates, radio voice of the Pirates, former big league pitcher with them and a few other teams, Bob Walk will turn 69. And Harold Reynolds, a really good second baseman for Seattle and Baltimore, now one of the voices of Major League Baseball on the MLB Network. Harold Reynolds, pardon me, will be 64. November 27th, the first ever Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade was on November 27th, 1924. That means this year will be the 100th anniversary of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. The Beatles released the album Magical Mystery Tour on November 27th, 1967. At least one good side on that one. George Harrison released his opus, really, the great three album set, All Things Must Pass, on November 27th, 1970. He had all these songs he kind of built up as the Beatles reached their end. They were dominated, obviously, by the all-time songwriting team of Lennon and McCartney. George Harrison had become a pretty good songwriter by 1968-69, had all these songs kind of built up in a library, if you will, and poured them out on All Things Must Pass, and it was the number one album of 1970/71. Tiger Woods had the famous car crash in his driveway where allegedly his then-wife, Elin, took a 9-iron to the driver's side window. Woods was injured, hospitalized, went into detox for sex addiction after that. That crash occurred November 27, 2009. It really caused a stir. Bruce Lee, born November 27, 1940. Jimi Hendrix, up there in the list of greatest guitar players ever, born November 27, 1942. He was one of the many, unfortunately for us, musicians, famous musicians, great musicians, who passed away at the age of 28. Bill Nye, the science guy, will turn 69. Caroline Kennedy Schlossberg, daughter of President Kennedy and Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, Caroline Kennedy will be 67. She is currently serving her last months as U.S. ambassador to Australia. And Jimmy Rollins, former MVP, helped lead the Phillies to a World Series title in 2008. Jimmy Rollins will be 45. November 28th, this year it will be Thanksgiving. The big three, that would be Churchill, Roosevelt, Stalin, met at Tehran in Iran on November 28, 1943. Birthdays include my mother-in-law, who I paid tribute to earlier this year. Judy would have been, well, we won't say what she would have been. Her birthday was November 28th. Berry Gordy Jr., founder of Motown Records, still kicking as of this podcast. Berry Gordy Jr. will be 95. Hall of Famer Paul Warfield, from Warren Western Reserve High School, the Ohio State Buckeyes, played for the Cleveland Browns. His rookie year, the Browns won the world championship in 1964, broke his collarbone the next year and couldn't play, was eventually traded to the Miami Dolphins in 1970 for quarterback. We won't go into that. Won a couple of Super Bowls with the Dolphins, came back to the Browns at the end of his career. Paul Warfield, the great, 82 on November 28th. John Stewart, TV personality, will be 62. And former Penguins goaltender, won three Stanley Cups with the black and gold, Marc-Andre Fleury, will be 40 on November 28th. Still playing for the Minnesota Wild, by the way. I think this is his final season. All right, that will do it for our birthdays and anniversaries segment of the podcast this week. Couple of topics, if you will, that I want to get into. One is, has anybody seen J.D. Vance lately? Where's J.D. Vance? We could do a Where's Waldo with him. You know, vice presidents will occasionally, well, eventually, I think is the right word, fade into oblivion until they take office. They don't usually fade into oblivion this early. Where is he? Nobody's seen him lately. I'm sure he's doing something, but wow. He has just vanished from the scene. He may be better get used to that, I'm thinking. Okay. We'll deal with the NBA Cup going on right now, the in-season tournament, if you will. I'm not a big fan of that. I think it's kind of really fake to gin up interest in the league early in the season. Maybe that works. I don't know. It doesn't work for me. The one thing I can say is the courts that they're playing on for the NBA Cup, they're hideous, mostly. Watched the Celtics play the Cavaliers last night up in Boston. The Celtics court was way, 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 way too green, with too many weird lines going back and forth. They tried to simulate parquet. It doesn't work simulated. Boston, play on the parquet. Thumb your nose at the league. Play on the parquet. If they fine you, they fine you. You should be playing on the parquet floor in the Boston Garden every single game. I know I'm old-fashioned, but, man, I don't like the, you know, I don't like most of them, but I don't like theirs particularly. By the way, nice win for the Celtics Tuesday against the no longer undefeated Cleveland Cavaliers. It was a good game. Cleveland's got a very good team. The Celts are still the champs, though, and they have a nice record themselves. I think they're 12-3 to start the season. That'll do. That's all fine, really. Okay, moving to local high school happenings in sports particularly. There are some league shakeups going on. I know many of our listeners either are from the greater Akron area, Talmadge area, or actually went to school here or worked here or whatever the case may be. As you may know, the Suburban League is experiencing some changes. Talmadge, Cuyahoga Falls, and Kent Roosevelt will leave the Suburban League after next school year, the 25-26 school year, to join the Metro Athletic Conference. The Metro Athletic Conference, the schools they'll be joining will be Cloverleaf, who used to be in the Suburban League, Field, Norton, Ravenna, Springfield, Streetsboro, and Woodridge. That will be the new league, adding Talmadge, Cuyahoga Falls, and Kent Roosevelt in another year and a half. Tuesday, this past Tuesday, it was announced that Medina, Kenston, and Mayfield will join the remaining 13 Suburban League schools for the 26-27 school year. The Suburban League now consists of, well, it will consist of, when that happens, Solon, Highland, Stowe, Hudson, North Royalton, Wadsworth, Copley, Revere, Barberton, Mayfield, Kenston, Aurora, Brecksville, Quinsburg, and Nordonia. Those will be the 16 remaining Suburban League schools. They will split big school, small school divisions for some sports, and in some sports, those it won't be set in stone. Some of the schools will shuttle between the small school division and the large division, depending on the sport. That's the plan, at least, for the Suburban League. So Talmadge leaving the Suburban League. Talmadge joined the Suburban League in the 1990-91 school year when I was, a substitute and a coach there. And their run will end in the Suburban League after next year, the 2025-26 school year. They'll join the Metro Athletic Conference. It's a good move for Talmadge, I believe, personally. Okay. There are our topics for the week. Let's get to our questions. The old questions, a couple of questions from our last podcast. The first question was, what's the answer to last, I'm reading it here. Last week's question was, there are 13 Division I men's basketball programs in Ohio. How many can you name? By the way, you can answer these questions or send in a question of your own through our email address, which is 3TREEGoodQuestions@gmail.com. That's 3GoodQuestions@gmail.com. The answers to last week's question. Okay, 13 Division I men's basketball programs in Ohio. Here they are in no particular order. Akron, Kent State, beat Kent State in football last night. Miami, Toledo, Bowling Green, Ohio University, Cincinnati, Xavier, Dayton, Cleveland State, Youngstown State, Wright State, and the Ohio State Buckeyes. There's your 13 Division I men's basketball programs in Ohio. Ohio State beat Evansville last night, 80-30, by the way. My goodness. Okay, so there's part one of last week's question. Part two, what was the greatest game in Major League Baseball history? For me, I don't have to think about it very much. It's the 1960 World Series Game 7 between the Pirates and New York Yankees at Forbes Field. A back-and-forth crazy game, three-run homers, bad hops, clutch singles, home runs that have gone that have become kind of oblivious but were really important that day, by Hal Smith particularly, and ending in the only walk-off Game 7 home run in Major League Baseball history by the Hall of Famer Bill Mazeroski, the Pirates' second baseman, leading off the bottom of the ninth against Ralph Terry, hit the second pitch over the wall at the 406 mark at Forbes Field over Yogi Berra's head, of all people. That, to me, is the game. You just have to see it. I have a DVD of the game, and I've watched it a few times, of the original telecast, black and white telecast of the game. It was a crazy ball game. It defied logic and description. What a Game 7 that was. We had a pretty interesting game to finish the World Series this year, by the way, that Dodgers-Yankees Game 5. That was pretty weird. Okay, those were our two questions from last week. This week, as I mentioned before, listener Nick Brausch sent in a question about filibusters. It's almost a two-part question. A filibuster, by the way, for those of you who may not know, is a rule that's kind of unique to the United States Senate, where a senator can get the floor, hold the floor, and unless the opposing side can muster 60 votes to stop it, he or she can keep talking continuously and hold the floor with certain rules. They can't leave the chamber. They can't drink anything but milk or water, I think it is. They can't sit down to talk. They have to stand in the well of the Senate and talk. It's a very peculiar thing. Nick asks, if I, myself, were in charge of leading a filibuster, what would I choose to speak about to maximize my time? Well, me being who I am, I'd probably read from some of my favorite books, like essays that are in the book, The Baseball 100, or some of my other favorite books. I'd have my aides line me up with some books to read until I could speak no more, probably. The second part of Nick's question was also, what were some memorable subjects discussed during historical usage of the filibuster? Well, I went to look those up. I knew about a couple of these, but a couple of them I'd totally forgotten about. Here are some memorable subjects discussed during historical usage of the filibuster in the United States Senate. Huey Long, the firebrand senator from Louisiana in 1935, shortly before he was assassinated, by the way, down in the state capitol there in Baton Rouge, he read recipes for Roquefort salad and ways to fry oysters as part of his filibuster. Strom Thurmond, the South Carolina senator, in 1957 tried to filibuster to death a civil rights bill. If you knew Strom Thurmond and know about him, you shouldn't be surprised by that. He has the record for the longest filibuster. He filibustered the Senate for 24 hours and 18 minutes. Did I mention you can't use the restroom during the filibuster, too? Some people have actually worn diapers, so that's not a problem. I don't know if he did or not. Anyway, Strom Thurmond in 1957 read aloud the voting laws of each state, all 48 at the time. Plus, he read George Washington's farewell address, among some other things, I'm sure. Senator Alphonse D'Amato from New York in the mid-1980s started reading names and numbers from the Washington, D.C. telephone book as part of his filibuster. Senator Ted Cruz from Texas in 2013, he made it 12 or 13 hours, I believe. Part of that time he read actually Dr. Seuss books. He read Green Eggs and Ham as part of his filibuster. You can read pretty much anything. You can ask a question of a fellow senator. If you have allies in the filibuster, if I were filibustering and I had three or four senators that were willing to help me, I could ask a question and yield for an answer. I haven't yielded control of the floor by doing that, if that makes any sense. So you can get people to help you to take a little breather, if you will. And some senators who have filibustered have done that. They've made filibustering too easy, by the way. All you need to do is get a petition slip, if you will, that says, hey, we've got 50 senators plus one that want to block this bill, and we'll have 60 if you try, we'll have more than enough, 40, I suppose it is, if you try to stop us. So they just put a slip in, and that's kind of a filibuster these days. I think they've made it too easy. They should make you do the old school filibuster if you really want to hold up legislation, I think. It'd be far more entertaining, for one thing. So, Nick, there you go. I hope that answers your questions. Thanks for the question. Keep on listening. Go Buckeyes. That will do it, I think, for this week in terms of our podcast. Remember, again, the email address if you want to get a hold of us or ask a question or answer a question is threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That's three, T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions@gmail.com. Also, if you're a college football fan, take a look for our fifth quarter podcast. You can find it on Spotify where you find Then and Now. The season has really heated up. The Buckeyes got some really bad news last night. Their starting center, Seth McLaughlin, transfer from Alabama, evidently has torn his Achilles tendon and will miss the remainder of this season. That's a really tough injury at a really tough time. But we talk in detail about what's going on in college football. We have the championship games and the playoff, the new 12-team playoff in place. So if you're into that, take a listen. Find the fifth quarter on Spotify by me, John Shomo. Thanks for listening again. Thank you, all you loyal listeners out there. Hopefully you have a great week. We'll talk to you next week just before Thanksgiving. Have a good week and weekend, everybody.